Blog Talk Radio.
On radio, I am Eric Burke, and with me is
Owen McIntyre. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. What's going on, Owen?
Nothing much. I just got back from the reptile show in Oaks, Pennsylvania today. It was a pretty good show. A little bit of foot traffic. Got to meet a few carpet python people, and I think even got a chance to turn some people too. So you know, it's always good to bring more people towards the addiction, because then you know. Repeat customers and all that stuff, but there are other reasons too that you know, we have more people now. So
awesome!
Yeah, it was a good show.
Ah, cool. We that's one of the we have four shows over here in the Pennsylvania area. That's pretty much it, right?
We have the Hamburg Reptile Show, which is you know the big one that everybody seems to go to. We have the Oaks Show that jumps between Oaks, Pennsylvania, and Reading, Pennsylvania, kind of does like every other month. It depends on where it's going to be. And then I think we have Mars, PA, and the one out in Pittsburgh. There's probably other ones I'm forgetting. So I think I have all of them. But, yeah.
Great.
No,
I remember back in December of 2008, I was walking through Hamburg, and I stumbled upon Jason's table there. And I didn't have any carpets at the time, and I was blown away by the tigers that he had, and I was hooked from that point forward. So I think I got it wasn't a tiger, but it had a tiger parent. It was a coastal. And then the other one was from his Tiger Jack Sib. Caring.
It's funny that you should mention 2008 because I think that is the same exact year I picked up my red jag male from Jason, my red jag Talon. I picked him up from Jason I think the same year, and he bred for me last year. And I know you're admiring my baby boy Echo this week.
Yes.
And he is. Talon is his father, so it's kind of like Jason got me to, he got me the snake that is producing some crazy, crazy ones over here. So, yeah,
wow.
Definitely. I also have the two red tigers from Jason. So you and I have spent, quite a bit of time over at Jason Balin's table, and he's always good to talk to at various shows. And it's almost like he puts a snake, especially for me, in the center of his display, kind of like, hey, Owen, you could buy this, and then one of the reasons I leave my wallet at home at snake shows. So,
true story. but yeah, Jason's on tonight, and he's going to be talking to us about everything from carpet pythons to, I know he worked with Bolin's pythons, and I think he's one of the only guys that in the U.S. or in the world actually that got them to breed and produce eggs, and that's a pretty cool.
That is very cool. Oh yeah. Definitely get to pick his brain on that one.
Yeah. Eventually, one day I'll work with them. I don't know. Maybe in a couple years I'll get a pair of them, or maybe a couple. And see what
I'm too terrified, so I'll leave them. I'll leave them to you guys. I just keep imagining that I'll spend buttloads of money on these beautiful animals that will just be that and just kind of sit there, and I'll be like, breed, and they'll openly refuse every year, and then it's just going to annoy me. So, I'll leave that one to you. I'll stick to the easier stuff.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Mm. Fair enough. Yeah, I was going to touch on one of my things that I wanted to talk about tonight was, you finally got around to posting up pics over there on Morelia Playground. I saw some of your old backs, and it's pretty nice, man. Very, very nice jacks. And my favorite, of course, was Echo. That was definitely the head turner of the bunch.
He was, and he was a head turner coming out of the egg. Echo comes from, like I said, my red jag from Balin, my male Talon, crossed with, I guess they call them lesser tigers or tiger siblings or het tiger, whatever you want to call it today. It's a tiger that doesn't have the stripes. The stripe is so broken, it's kind of got a blotchy pattern.
Yes.
And I got these phenomenal babies that all have bald backs, great pattern, great color, and, of course, there was Echo. And Echo came out of the egg, and I actually was so taken aback by him, I dropped it. So... I instantly went, oh my God, he's doing, oh God, I killed it. So, I mean, but he's fine. Okay. He's fine. And I swear I'm not that bad of a person, but, it was like a 2 second, oh crap, I dropped it. But, he and his color is getting much more interesting. He hasn't really gotten any kind of yellows on him, but he's got no black towards the tail, and he's just a all around interesting snake, and he was a keeper from the get go. And he's got, I think I maybe have one sibling, one other jag in the clutch that kind of resembles him in color and in pattern, but not as good. So I don't know, kind of interested to see what he does. So.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. What I got going on over here, I'm pretty excited about a couple things. I got I paired up my caramel jag with my granite girl tonight.
Nice.
Make some caramel head granite and caramel jag head granite. That would be pretty cool.
All your snakes have like eight different names. You know that, right? It's like, this is my caramel head granite super duper kind of. I don't know, too many names, dude. Genetics turned my head.
Yeah, right. And I posted up a thing, I don't know if any, I know nine people saw it, but a carpet fest. I think we're going to go with making it in the Northeast area.
Mm-hmm.
I posted a poll up to see if anybody would be interested in coming, and so far it was eight people saw, answered.
Excellent.
I'm just trying to find a spot where it could be, but hopefully we can get that going come springtime. So,
excellent. Definitely looking forward to that.
Should be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else going on?
We're knee-deep in breeding season right now. I kind of just chucked my caramels in with their mates for, giggles to see what would happen, because you're telling me that yours are going, and other people are telling me theirs are going, so I thought, why not? And I did catch my male caramel breeding with my Michael Pennell female at least three times, including this morning. So, and she's a very nice yellow Michael Pennell. So I'm kind of interested to see what happens there. And then the surprise project is also going along quite well, but I'm not ready to tell anybody about that yet. So,
cool.
Sorry, everyone.
I also, I finally got the other day from Aaron and Mark. I got the PC IJs that we were talking about when Luke was on. I'm telling you, man, they're really nice.
Are they?
Really, really nice. Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Very nice. So, pretty excited about that. I can't wait to see what breeding them into the granite line will do to the granite. So
that would actually be quite interesting.
Like, yeah. Because, you know, they have sort of like this hypo look to them in there. They're
right.
Really nice. So.
Oh, you're going to have to, like, post pictures up on Morelia, like, now. Do it now.
Yeah.
So this way I can look at it when we're done. So, yeah. What were we doing yet? Forget the interview with Jason. Just go do that now.
We got the chat going on over here, and let's see who we got. It's Chuck's over there, me, and Mo is over there. I don't see you.
All right,
you're not over there.
Sure, I should probably go do that. Send me a link. What?
they're talking about the Carpa Fest.
Cool.
Yeah, it looks like they're. I can't chat, type, and talk. So I guess if nothing else is going on, we'll bring Jason on and.
Bring Jason on. Let's just jump right into it.
All right. One sec. It's not coming on here.
Oh no.
There he is. Jason, hey, how you doing?
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm doing well.
Sorry.
Good.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, Eric lost you for like 5 seconds, and I nearly had a heart attack, so it's okay. But we're all okay now. All right. Well,
good.
Jason, I guess we're going to jump into it, and we're going to jump into it with the questions that I know everybody always enjoys asking and getting the answers to, and of course, that is, how did you get into reptiles, and how did you get specifically into carpet pythons?
Well, I guess when I got into reptiles early on. I was always the kid who brought stuff home, and luckily I had parents who didn't throw it out of the house immediately. So I was allowed to keep just about everything I found. So basically my love of reptiles started with just going out in the field and collecting them myself. You know, anywhere from box turtles to, you know, decay snakes to frogs. I mean, it was anything I could find. I brought it home. So that's how I really got started. And I guess carpet pythons, I got a pair of carpet pythons from a buddy of mine who's just getting rid of them. And I didn't really think too much of it at the time. I had them. I set them up in some neodesic cages and just started watching them, and just that's where it started. I kind of fell in love with them. That's when I started adding stuff.
Awesome. So was there like something originally just kind of like draw you through with that one pair? Was it like their temperament, their colors?
I think
eat your face. I don't know.
Actually, they were pretty nice. So I didn't, you know, they were pretty placid. But, yeah, it was their colors. It was just the way they moved, the fact that they were always out and about. You know, they were up on perches. They just seemed to do a lot more in the enclosure than a lot of the other snakes I had at the time.
Awesome.
They were just kind of fascinating. And
cool.
And the fact that they were out all the time was really cool. Even though they had hide boxes, that they were rarely, if ever, in them. So.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about your collection. You're the guy at the show, Jason, that I come running up to, and I'm like, I got a caramel, and you're like, I have six, Owen. You need to go sit down now, and, you know, then I go off. what's going on with your collection right now?
I don't think I'm that rude about it.
I'm not. I never say you are. I didn't mean it that way.
What do I have right now? Good gosh. I'm working with I do have a pair of caramels, but just one pair. I'm working with the jungles, specifically the zebras. I've got a couple different females I'll be breeding my male zebra to this year. I've got a pretty good collection of tigers from a couple different lines. So I'm looking forward to working with them this year because after this year's pairing with the red tigers, I was really sort of reinvigorated by the tigers. So I'm going to do a lot more with them this coming season. I also work with the jags. I do tiger jags as well. And I guess one of the new favorites in my collection, I've got a pair of Darwins. I got a het female and an albino male, and those are really at the top of my – I can't wait to get them up the size list. So
nice. Wow. Nice.
Yeah. I've got a pretty decent selection right now of things to choose from for breeding this year, so I haven't quite finished in my mind making up my pairings yet, but hopefully it should work out with some cool stuff.
Awesome. So, I mean, I know you got the Darwins, and I hear that the zebra things are going off well. I hear you got a breeding loan from Headhunter with Brinkley going on. I think that,
I do.
Right?
I do.
You do.
They made me. I didn't have a choice.
So they forced you into it.
Oh, by the way, you'll be taking her home with you. I said, oh, okay, that'll work.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, but I'm really excited about that one because she's a great-looking animal, and she's from Will Leary's CVR line, mm-hmm. and that was the original pair I did with my zebras, and they turned out great, so I am really looking forward to it.
Excellent.
Hopefully they will like each other this year.
That's right. Tempt me with better looking zebras. It's fantastic. Yeah, I'll probably be buying one from you at some point. So we'll just say that now. I know you said you got the different lines going on with the carpet pythons, and of course, you know, I am a very big supporter of your red tiger line. You know, I think they're fantastic. I have two. So. What other lines are you working with? I know, like, can you describe some of your other lines of tigers, your tiger jags, something like that?
Basically, I'm working with two of what I would call, like, the recognized tiger lines. I'm working with the original line that I, you know, from the original pair that I bought from Neville James back in the late 90s, early 2000 time period. That's who originated the tiger line. He's out in California. I don't think he works with them anymore, but that's the person who had the original tiger male that started the whole thing. And so I work with that line. I work with another line from a guy by the name of Andy Balk, who's out of Atlanta. And again, I don't even know if he works with them anymore. But those two lines seem to be compatible. And my guess is they're probably stemming from the same original male somewhere along the line. So those are the two lines I'm working with, and plus the animals that I've outcrossed myself. Those are, you know, obviously this year that was the first time I bred those outcrossed animals, and I got pretty good results. So I'm going to keep working with that line as well.
Excellent. Definitely looking forward to more tigers.
There's a question over here from Chuck. I'm sorry, guys. That he was asking.
Okay.
You said your Darwins are het for albino, right?
I have the female's a het, and the male is a visual albino.
Oh, okay. Wow, nice.
They're very very cool snakes. They're different from other carpet pythons. They look different. Their mannerisms are different. They act differently. But they're really cool.
Awesome.
So we got the history on the tiger carpet. What are your thoughts on the genetics or what's going on with that genetically?
That's always the big question. And I think there are several schools of thought out on it. I think it's definitely a proven genetic trait. I think the term polygenetic probably is the term that people are sort of gravitating towards. You can certainly breed a well-striped animal to a normal-looking animal and get striped babies, but it really depends on what the normal-looking animal genetically has in it going on. So you have to kind of pick the right normal-looking animal in order to get striped babies right off the bat, but you definitely will get 100% striped animals when you breed two tigers together too. So genetically, it's certainly something that's passed down, you know, from generation to generation. It's just a matter of which animals you're choosing to put with each other to get the better results. You're certainly going to get tigers when you breed a tiger to a normal-looking coastal, but it really does depend on what that normal coastal has in it. Coastals, I think, have a propensity for striping anyway, so that's a lot of the reason I think the original pairings were so highly striped. He picked the right animals, knowingly or not.
Okay.
He didn't. So.
Very nice.
Now, Jason, can you also get with a tiger to a normal? Can you get some animals that aren't really striped that? Ruthie at all? I mean, maybe like a lat stripe, but kind of busy blotted pattern?
Absolutely. I think one of the first times we saw that happen is when Ted Thompson bred one of my female tigers to one of his coastals, and he got a lot of really strange-looking babies, and they almost looked – some of them weren't striped at all, and some of them looked like they had a zipper pattern going down the back rather than a full stripe. So it was sort of that alternating – pattern that kind of mimicked a stripe, but it wasn't that full, clear, patternless dorsal that you're used to getting from the tigers. And I think at the time he called them lesser tigers or het tigers or something. But that's when we first started figuring it out that, you know, it really depends on what you're breeding these things to, as to what kind of percentage of striping you're going to be getting from the offspring.
Now, if you breed fully striped female to a fully striped male, will they come out all fully striped?
To date, yes. I've done those pairings now probably 4 or 5 times, and I've always gotten 100%, you know, striped animals out of clutch. Now, the clutch is still variable. You're going to have some with better striping, meaning have some wider striping, some are less zigzagged than others, but they're all striped.
Excellent.
I know you have the red tigers. What are some of the other projects you have going on with your tigers?
Well, I have done a few years worth of tiger jag clutches, which I think, you know, they're pretty cool. So far I've really enjoyed working with that, whether it be tiger jag to normal, tiger jag to, say, a tiger jag sib, or even tiger jag to tiger jag. I've gotten some really neat-looking animals from all those pairings. And I think that's a pretty nice genetic mix. When you put those two things together, I think you get some really neat-looking animals.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Have you ever done red tiger to the jag?
No. I didn't. This was the first year my red tigers. This past year was the first year my red tigers were big enough to breed.
Oh, okay.
And so I really just bred them to each other before I did anything else. I just wanted to see
what happened,
what that was going to be. And then I was anticipating. I was really doing it more for color. When I first started, you know, thinking about the pair, I was doing it more for color than I was for striping and pattern. And I got exactly the opposite. I got better striped animals that were, you know, they were red, but they weren't as red as I thought they were going to be.
Okay. Because I was thinking about doing red tiger to jag last year, and it didn't work out for me. So something that I think would be interesting to see.
I think
now
the
red tigers that you're working with, are they the same? Is that the red coastal from the Madame Blueberry line, or is that?
No, it's totally, yeah. The red tigers that I have are totally Madame Blueberry deficient. What I did was I got a red tri-striped male from Will Leary that was unrelated to anything else he had,
mm-hmm.
and he wasn't using it for anything, so I bought it from him. And I bred that to my one of my original line tigers. I got a bunch of nice babies. They weren't, you know, Owen actually has one, or actually has two. They weren't like super
yeah.
striped animals, but they had good striping to them. And again, I was doing that color, doing that pairing to get some color into the line. So that's where the red tigers that I currently are working with came from.
Okay. All right, and then you also hatched out some red coastals that they almost look albino. what's that from? What's your thoughts on
that?
That is
Madame Blueberry blood. That's a the male was a Madame Blueberry Jag Sib, and the female was totally unrelated to that. I got her. I think actually she came from. She was one of the original Sibs from Jan Eric that I got from somebody
okay.
back in the day. So the two of those were completely unrelated. And I think that Madame Blueberry gene just blew past every other gene that was in those two animals to create that one red one that I produced this year. Now, I've done that pairing in the past, and I've gotten red animals before, but never anything that red. So
that
was sort of a surprise.
Yeah, that's a very nice animal. What's your thoughts on the HCQ tiger?
I think they're really nice. I know Owen works with them with the HCQ
yeah.
line, and I think they've produced some really nice animals. I know Will Bird has produced some really nice ones using that lineage. So.
So's
Anthony Caponetto. He's produced some really – and what they've done is they've really injected some yellow into that original line of tigers, which the original line doesn't seem to produce, like, super yellow animals by any stretch. They're more manila-colored.
Right. Okay. And what do you think that the tiger gene is going to do to, say, some of the other morphs that are out there, like the – say the zebra, for instance. Do you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I have actually. I went outside my my normal coastal-to-coastal pairing last year, and I did breed the zebra to a tiger jag. And
very cool.
It was going great. The clutch was a nice, big, fat clutch. She was incubating them for a while. She started leaving the clutch, so I took it from her and only wound up hatching out three of them or four of them.
Oh.
And one of them, I got no jags that I could – or zebra jags that I could see. I got one zebra hatched out and subsequently drowned himself in the substrate.
Oh.
And then I've got another very strange-looking zebra from that pairing. And I don't see any real tiger influence to it, but it's certainly not what you would call a normal-looking zebra either. So,
okay.
Huh.
I wonder if it's something
that
has to be refined, like the tiger, like to breed it back. And
I think you are looking at breeding some. You know, if you really want to see what happens. It'll be the offspring bred back together to see what they truly can produce.
So you're thinking that later down in the road we're going to get, like, albino tigers, caramel tigers?
Sure. I mean, I think we've got enough morphs out there now that can be crossed into each other that you're going to be looking at, like, triple visual morphs in the next few years. It's, you know, that's kind of what's exciting these days is, you know, we've got enough out there now that we can start making some of this crazy, crazy looking stuff.
Not yet.
It'll be interesting.
Awesome.
I think the with the citrus tiger line that I have. I think when you put albino into that, because of the contrast between the the citrus tiger has, that the albino is just gonna really pop. I think that it's gonna be a high contrast albino and really really make a nice thing.
Yeah, and it should look really neat.
I mean, when it comes to me, I'm looking forward to the super caramel tigers. I mean, the ones that are really going to have very little black and just kind of some bold stripes on them, I think would be amazing.
I think you're right. I think those tigers are going to be really, really nice looking animals. You know, once you've got a couple, you know, different generations to work with, that you're going to see some really nice stuff come out of that. And, that's something that's on my radar, too. I'm just trying to figure out when to do it.
Right.
I'm trying to be a responsible breeder this year and not do 1,000 clutches.
Right.
Although, you know, you want to try to do as many, you know, combinations as possible. But at the same time, you know, with the economy the way it is, and you know, this stuff's not flying off the shelf, so you don't want to create too many things that you can't find good homes for.
Right.
Right. So what are your thoughts on the high contrast Queensland line? Do you know what the origins of that is?
I know the origin. Well, I know that, you know, they came from Dave Prada originally, but as far as that goes, I don't know where he got them from. I know that's who established that line of them. I don't know where they came from before that. I've got one here. I've got a really nice looking male here that I haven't decided what I'm going to be doing with him yet either. But I think it's a really nice presentation that line has. I like it's strange looking because you get less of the modeling that you would get with a normal coastal. And the pattern's much tighter. There's less going on inside, you know, the darker areas. They're a lot more solid, and it really makes for a nice looking animal.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yep. I have several, so I have to agree.
I think when I started to see, you know, other people do the pairing of high contrast Queensland tigers and, you know, and get those tigers, they look almost identical to the citrus tigers, which is pretty much what's going on with that line. And I think that one of the things that makes the citrus tiger become more yellow is the fact that it may or may not have jungle blood in it, because I think I think it's the female was thought to be part jungle, part coastal. So, I don't know. I think that's the difference. Somebody was asking what the difference between the citrus tiger and the high contrast Queensland tiger was. But I think you get that same effect, you know.
Awesome.
So, what about the tiger IJ? Does anything
He's doing well.
With that project?
he's probably he might be able to go this year. I don't really have anything specific to pair him with,
okay.
So I might just hold off on another year until I can find. I do have two animals from that same line, but they're a year and 2 years behind him. So
okay,
I'd like to wait until I have specific animals, you know, from that same lineage to put him to, so we can figure out what's going on, maybe, you know, right off the bat. I know Mike Curtin has another male and a female as well. I don't know how big his are. I don't know how close he is to breeding them either. But I think that's really the only two right now that are around. I think there was a third one, but I think it's deceased.
Now, did that line just pop up, or is that how did that come about? Was it
that line originated
that just popped out of a clutch?
It popped out of a pair of wild caught animals that originally were owned by Bob Fudo, out of Chicago. And excuse me, he sold them to some people out there as well, and they bred them and got some, you know, really nicely striped animals from them. But for some reason there weren't as many. I think they had some incubation problems, and only a few of them hatched. And then they had some problems with their rack, and the rack I think got a little too warm. They had the babies in it, and so, you know, long story short, there are not that many of them out there anymore. So it should be interesting to see what can be done with them in the next couple years. Again, breeding them to select animals to see if you can bring out the striping even further. I should probably get a picture of that guy and put it up because I haven't in quite some time.
Yeah.
Eric will yell at you for these things.
Nice.
Yeah.
Anything strikes open for me. Good. Good to hear.
All right. Now, Jason, can you give us some basic I know everybody has their own way of keeping and breeding, and, you know, basically everybody runs their snake room differently. Can you give me some basic requirements you use for your carpet pythons, the temps, feeding, what kind of substrate?
I guess I'll start off from adult and go down. The adults I keep in 4-foot cages, different types of 4-foot cages, whether it be Neodesha, Boophile, animal plastics, and I find those that size to be an ideal size for that size of snake. Substrate, I just use paper. I think it's the cleanest, easiest way to house them. It cleans up easy. You can put new paper down quickly, so it works out. I think the easiest for me anyway. And temps, I keep them just like you would any other, you know, python. I keep a nice warm spot at 88 to 90 degrees on one side, and whatever the ambient room temperature is on the other side. And they get fed weekly. I'm not one to push my animals quickly. Maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. I don't know, but I don't. They get fed once a week, and it's a fairly regimented feeding schedule.
Nice. That's always good. The juveniles, what do you do with them?
Well, they're all set up in racks, shoebox racks, then sweater box, and then they go into some breeder racks that I have as they get older. I move them up as they get bigger, so to accommodate their, you know, their size and give them enough room to move around. So it's just, you know, easier to keep a snake in the size enclosure that it's comfortable in, because otherwise, if you got a big snake in a little tiny enclosure, it just makes for problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, and the juveniles, the neonates. I'm sorry, the babies.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, kind of shoebox rack.
Yeah, shoebox rack, and you know. Now, for the babies, I'll use aspen.
Okay.
Just because it's easy to work with too. I don't like cutting paper to shoebox size.
Yeah, I hate it.
And the aspen, I've never really had a problem with keeping them on aspen bedding, whether it be them ingesting the aspen or anything else. And you kind of use it like kitty litter when they defecate, it just kind of clumps up, and you just, you know, you can remove it pretty quickly without, you know, too much hassle.
Now, do you feed live or frozen thaw?
I feed frozen thaw whenever I can. And, you know, mm-hmm. as everybody knows, you're going to have the few that hold out for live, and, you know, I'll feed them live as long as that's all they're taking. But I do actively try to switch them every time I feed.
Okay.
And if they still don't eat it, I'll switch it back. But
I know you and I were talking.
Grow.
Yeah, whatever it wants. I know you and I were talking. I think this was. No, I don't think this is even this season. I think it was last season. You had a baby that was giving you great deals of trouble, and you ended up feeding it rat tails. Has
mm-hmm.
that worked in the past for problem feeders?
It works. It's I find it. my success rate just individually isn't that great with it. I've gotten a few to switch over after feeding them rat tails, but I almost wait until they take it themselves. Because once you start feeding them rat tails or feeding them anything for that matter, you've basically started their metabolism. So you kind of have to keep up with that, or they're going to decline quickly. I find the stubborn feeders that I just wait out, and then they finally take it themselves, do better.
Okay.
They can go a good long while without even feeding for the first time. I've had them go 6-7 months after hatching and not eat anything, and then finally just decide, okay, I'm ready now. And they didn't look too worse for wear. I mean, as far as they didn't lose that much weight, and I think it's because their metabolism hadn't started, and they weren't processing anything, so they weren't really losing any weight.
All right, that works for me. I like that idea.
What I did think was neat. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I was reading some reports the other day. This yogurt and baby food method.
I missed that one. What the hell are you talking about?
there's somebody posted. I don't remember who it was, so I can't give him credit for it. But they used just regular plain yogurt, non-flavored yogurt, and some baby food, and basically put it in them via I guess a syringe or whatever they used. And then the bacteria in the yogurt helped jumpstart their feeding response. And then the nutrition in the baby food, was able to, they could start feeding that way. And then he said he's had good success with, feeding that a couple times, and then immediately their appetite takes off, and then they start taking food on their own. I haven't tried it yet, but I was interested in it. I thought that was a pretty interesting idea. Basically getting the proper bacteria in their gut to get them to get their feeding response to get going.
Awesome. Now I'm going to harken back to my zoo days. That was actually plain yogurt and the chicken baby food is what we used to mix in the formula for the lions and the tiger cubs when they were on bottles. So I don't know why I didn't think of this sooner, but hey, it could work. It worked for a large cat. Why can't it work for a tiny reptile? So,
I think as long as you're careful about how much you're putting in at one time, it certainly can't hurt them. So, I mean, it's worth a shot.
Hey, anything's worth a shot. When you get to that one point with one feeder, one baby that, you're about to start ripping your hair out of your scalp, everything's worth a shot. So, I'm cool with that.
Sorry to interrupt. I got a question
here. No, please.
I heard this. I just actually read it in the Complete Carpet Python book that one of the things that they get picky feeders going is to offer a perch, because the Morelia in general, like to attack stuff from the ground and get their prey coming down upon it, and that it helps jumpstart feeding. Do you use perches for your babies, your adults?
Some of my adult kids actually do have perches in them, and they use them. The bigger they get, though, the less they use them.
Okay.
And for the juveniles, I have perches in some of them as well, and honestly, I haven't noticed a better feeding response with or without perches, but it makes sense because naturally they're hunting from perches in the wild. So,
right.
Cool.
Okay.
That's something an interesting theory as well.
Awesome. Now, Jason, when you're doing the breeding, do you allow your males to combat?
I have done it in the past and to jumpstart. If I've got a sluggish male who hasn't really decided he's ready to breed, I have used them in the past with varying success. It's not my normal practice, no.
Okay. I don't know if you do any other tricks. Like, I know my trick is the rival male shed in a spray bottle and just kind of do that to get the scent mark and do anything like that. Just kind of get it jump starting on a male.
I have tried that. I have put sheds in there with them actually, and just to see if they get spurred on by that. Luckily, most of the males I have don't really seem to have a problem getting themselves started. So
that's good.
I've been lucky in that respect. But I can see where it certainly does help. It does get the breeding juices going and the hormones are kicking, and I can see where it certainly would help.
Excellent.
It's just I just haven't had it to use it as much.
Right.
With the ones I have, so.
Right. Now, how many females do you do per male? Because I know I'm trying to do I'm trying to take that red tiger I got off you and breed him to my other red tiger and then my big red female. So I'm trying to do two females with him. So I mean, how many girls do you put to one of your boys?
Usually two, no more than three.
Okay.
I find after two, you're looking. Fertility rate seems to not be as great after two, between two and three. You're kind of stretching them a little thin. I know people who do up to three and four and get fine results, but I tend to keep it between two and three.
Okay.
All right. And I have a bunch of males, so I don't really need to do too much. One guy to three girls, unless I'm really doing something specific. If I'm trying to prove something out, or that male I want to follow that many clutches. So normally I don't need to.
Right. Right now, what age do you breed? First off, your girls, and then what age do you breed a boy? Now, I know there's, like, extenuating circumstances. If you got, like, a brand-new morph and he hits 18 months old, you're going to give him a shot just to see what happens. But when do you normally breed a boy, and when do you normally breed a girl?
With the girls, I really wait till they're at least 3 years old. I know some of the ones that I have that are two could probably go, but I usually wait until they're three. I just find, breeding them a little later kind of extends their breeding life, into their adulthood years. So I really try to wait until they're three. I can't say that I haven't tried breeding a two-year-old female. I have, and I got pretty decent results. But as a rule of thumb, I wait till three. As far as the males go, there's really no harm in breeding them at a young age. You're not doing them any disservice by doing that from a health standpoint. And I've bred very young males and males that I thought were probably too small to breed, and they did the job fine. In fact, I think the zebra that I bred the first year, he was barely 400 and some odd grams when he bred the first time.
Wow.
And he produced a decent clutch at that size. So I think you can breed them pretty small. Like you said, if you're trying to get them up to size quick, you want to get that morph out there as quickly as possible. And the males, I really don't see any problem with doing that, as long as you're not trying to stuff them full of food every 3 days.
that kind of slings down in the whole life thing. So yeah. Now, how do you approach selectively breeding? I mean, as far as my selective breeding goes, that looks pretty, and so does that one. Let's see what they look like together. So, I mean, is that pretty much how you take it, or do you go the step further and really kind of sit down and research and figure out your own stuff?
I think we all do it that way. So I do it that way. If I have two things that I think look pretty and I think they're going to make pretty babies, I'll put them together. And so there's that school of thought. Then also, I also do it the other way too. I really sit down and try to, if I'm working with something genetic and I'm trying to either outcross something or strengthen a certain line of animals by, using a different animal, from a different line. So as long as I know where all my animals are coming from, I do try to make sure that I'm putting certain animals together that I know are going to, strengthen the babies from a genetic standpoint. I certainly do try to do that. Other times, they're really pretty. I'm just going to put those together and see what I get. And, sometimes the results are good. Sometimes they're not so good. So.
I, Yeah, I think you and I had that conversation once. Sometimes you do the clutch that you really wanted to do, and you find out the public hates it. And then you're stuck with a bunch of babies that you're like, but they're awesome. Why aren't they selling? And so, yeah.
I do find that my perception of things sometimes is different than what the general public's perception of things are. So absolutely have done that and gotten skunked from a marketing standpoint and from getting rid of them. But if I really like it, I'll do it again.
It works. Why not? As long as you're happy with it.
So now we're going through breeding, and I think one of the things that carpet pythons are pretty well known for is maternal incubation. What's your experiences with that? And take us through the process.
Okay. First of all, if you've never done it, I recommend you do it at least once. It's fascinating.
Oh, God.
It is the coolest thing that I've ever done. And I can't say I do it with all my stuff, but I do it. If I know a female can take good care of the eggs, I'm going to let her keep them. And the funny thing is, as the season goes on, I worry about the ones with the mother less than I worry about the ones that are in the incubator, to be honest with you. Now, it is something that you have to kind of keep an eye on. I will say that. If the animal starts leaving the clutch for long periods of time and just becomes disinterested, you want to go in there and grab them and get them into the incubator. But the ones that that can do it and do it well, I will leave them with them every single time.
Have you noticed a female do it 1 year and then not do it the following year, or are the same females good at it, and then there's other females that just aren't good at it?
I noticed
a pattern there. Or?
I think there is. I think the females that are good at it are good at it, and the ones that aren't.
Okay.
It sounds simple, but I've noticed that I've given them. I don't know if anybody's ever thrown this out there or not, but the jag females don't seem to be as good maternal incubation wise as, say, some of the more normal patterned animals. I don't know why that is. It's just something, and I don't know that anybody's noticed it other than me. But I've let two or three jags try to incubate their clutch, and they don't know what they're doing. I don't know if that got lost in the jag gene or something, but they just don't seem to do it well. They'll wrap the clutch weird. It looks like a football, a sideways football sometimes. I've noticed that they don't have the same capabilities as some of the more normal, naturally patterned carpets do. But again, the ones that I like, the jag sibs, fine. They wrap a clutch. They sit on it the whole time, and they do a great job.
Now, are the jags just not showing any interest at all, or they're not? They try and give up.
I think. They do show an interest in initially, and I don't know why they can't seem to take it all the way through. And that's what happened to me last year with that one zebra tiger jag pairing. She just lost interest. In fact, I was getting really excited because she's doing a really good job. And we're 30 days into it and she hasn't left them yet. And then literally 31 days, she decided, I'm done. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm bored.
This is boring.
Wow.
You do it.
And the way I set them up, I set them up just like the way I would set them up for just normal laying. They've got a lay box with I use ripped up newspaper in the lay box. I don't use sphagnum or any moisture at all. I just plain ripped up newspaper. And they go in there and then they lay the eggs and they gather them up and then they sit on them, and I don't do anything else. I leave the temperatures the way they are. If it's a 4 foot or 6 foot cage, depending, I just leave the lay box kind of right in the middle of the enclosure, not on the heat, but, you know, close to the heat, so they can have access to it. And that seems to work fine. You will see them come off. They'll go sit on the heat for a while, and then they'll go right back to the clutch. Some people offer them food during that period of time. I don't, because I noticed that when you offer them food, they'll tend to defecate in the lay box.
Okay.
You don't want to get that on the eggs, but
right.
Then as far as humidity goes, I've never had any problem with humidity, other than what my ambient, you know, snake room humidity is.
Do you miss the cage at all, or do you miss
the cage occasionally, but not with any regularity. I found if they're on them nice and tight, not much moisture is escaping those eggs, it seems.
Wow.
Okay. Now, is the box you're using, the nest box, is that enclosed, or is that a tub without a lid?
It's a tub with a lid. It's either a Rubbermaid or a Sterilite tub with a hole on one side of the lid, and the other side's obviously closed up. But it's not closed. It just clips on there. I don't try to seal it anyway. So.
Okay.
And I tell you that the babies from the maternal incubation seem to be a lot more robust, bigger. They absorb more of the yolk sac, I think, while in the egg. They take a little longer to come out, and they seem to be really good right off the bat as well.
Oh, so you see better feeding.
Yeah, I'm still terrified.
Don't be. I was terrified the first year too. I mean, you really should try it. It's because when you go in there and the babies are starting to pip and the mother's sitting there with them, and you see the head of the mother, you see the head of the babies come out of the egg. It is really cool to watch. It's just
all
nature
right
at work.
Cool.
So if you do, if you know, the maternal incubation isn't working out and you go to artificial incubation, how are you setting your temps for incubating the eggs?
I set them usually right under 88 degrees, anywhere between 87 and 88 degrees in the incubator. The incubator I have is a fairly large one. It's probably, you know, between 5.5 and 5 feet tall. And I put, you know, Sterilite or Rubbermaid tubs in there. I use the that egg crate method, where the eggs aren't touching the substrate at all. And using that, I found much better hatch rates as well, using that stuff where they're not actually touching the medium. And the medium's usually, it's just a mixture of perlite and water. And I put two small holes on either side of the lid, and that's the only airflow that they get. Now, there is air circulating through the incubator, which is really important. You have to have the air circulating through the incubator to keep temperatures constant, you know, from the very top of the incubator to the very bottom of the incubator. You don't want to get too much of a temperature differential there. So having that air circulating through is really important.
Right.
Cool. All right. Now we'll get into the marketing business aspect of it. Jason, what do you think from your standpoint? I know you've been breeding carpets for, I know, longer than both Eric and I, and like, you know, you said, we have babies. You sold us babies that are now our adult breeders. So, what do you think is going on with the market? I know you said you're scaling back this year. So, what do you think the future kind of lies for us in the carpet world?
I think the future for the carpet world is going to be great. I think, you know, you're looking at some non-snake factors that are interrupting, you know, what would probably be a much more robust market. The economy's, you know, obviously a mess, and people don't have as much disposable income as they used to. So they're not spending as much money on stuff as you know that they don't need. So when I say I'm scaling back more for that reason than anything else. I think the carpet market, I think, is going to be fine. I think the snake market eventually will be fine too, you know, as soon as the economy stabilizes. But from the last, I would say the last 3 to 4 shows I've been to, I've talked to more people about carpets than I've talked to in the last probably, you know, 3-4 years. I think the interest is certainly is coming back. I think people who never heard of these things before are starting to see them at shows, see people talk about them. I think the websites, obviously, the Morelia Pythons forum, the Bush League forum, people are starting to get interested in these snakes. And I think you're going to see a resurgence in the next year or two, you know, as the next generation, if you want to call it that, start buying into this into these projects. I know, you know, Howard Moe and I did a show last weekend, and we all said, you know, we've talked to more people today at a small local show than we've talked, you know, in a long time. So, and I was at Tinley, and it was the same way. You know, just people are really starting to get excited about these things, and all the new morphs can only help. All the new, you know, eye-catching projects can only help, because that, I think that's what the market was lacking for a while. As the ball python market took off with all the crazy morphs that they've got, you know, it's obviously it's easy to get interested in something when it catches your eye, and that's what the ball python market has enjoyed over the last few years. But I don't think we're not that far behind. I'm kind of excited about how it's going to turn out in the next few years.
Excellent. I mean, I know what you're saying, definitely, especially because I had to ask someone to watch my table today because I needed a drink because my throat was getting dry and scratchy from talking to so many people today. So I definitely understand where you're coming from with that. What are your thoughts? Because I know you said you did Tinley, and they have the carpet row up at Tinley. What are your thoughts on that? Is it a good idea to have everybody kind of all bunched in one corner, or should we be spread out? Is it just kind of cool to have? I mean, I imagine I'd pay less attention to my table and more time talking with all you guys than, you know, selling my babies and end up going home with the same amount of babies. So,
well, I guess, you know, the first year we did it, there were only, I think, four of us, four different, you know, breeders there, and it was great. And we came back and we were all excited, and then everybody else said, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna do that." And we had a few more people there this year. And at the end of last year, and after all the excitement had died down, I started thinking to myself, was that really a good idea to tell people? not from a snake standpoint, because obviously it's very cool from a snake standpoint, but from a marketing standpoint, am I shooting myself in the foot here? But, no, it was great. I think enough people had enough different things and a good variety of stuff that we really weren't competing with each other like we thought we would be. And that was my big fear this year going into it with a few more people, you know, added to Carpet Row, that we would really kind of be stepping on each other's toes. And we really weren't. And I thought, you know, that's cool. It did work out. I wasn't, you know, I was wrong, and I was glad I was wrong. And it was fun. And that was the big thing, too. I think, you know, we all got to sell some stuff, which was certainly cool. When you go to a big show like that, you want to make sure you sell some things. But just having everybody there and, you know, to talk to and, you know, we were selling each other stuff too. Hey, I don't have this, but you know, go talk to Sean, or go. Luke's got this over here, or John's got this over here. We were basically selling each other stuff, and it was a collective effort, I was glad it really turned into that. It wasn't a cutthroat, you know, environment where everybody was trying to undercut everybody else's prices and things
right.
like that. It wasn't like that. So to answer your question, in a shorter fashion, I think it was great.
I think that's the key when you go to a show like that, is that you have, I think, for one, just my opinion, is that the people that I've dealt with carpet python seem to be nicer. I don't know if nicer is the right word, but, you know, more passionate maybe about the actual animal than so much about making money or anything else that comes along with breeding. And then also, I just think that presence at the show really pushes carpets out there in the limelight, you know? I think it really gives gives a nice presence at a show. And I think the investment that you guys made, whereas, yeah, one guy might have coastals and the other guy might have coastals too, and, you know, that type of thing. But I think the investment you're making into the whole carpet python market is more beneficial in the long term.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it really is. And, you know, with everybody localized there in one spot, people sort of got almost like a carpet immersion. They got to see just about every possible type that we have out there, you know, that we've all been working on, all the morphs, all the different combinations were there. And, you got to see it in one spot. And you got to, instead of having to walk from one side of the venue to the other side to compare certain things, they were right there. You could compare them right next to each other. So it really did work out well. And I'm excited to go back next year. It was just a lot of fun.
Excellent.
Big show and afterwards, it was just a lot of fun.
So you're definitely noticing a big rise in the interest in the species as well as what's coming down the pipeline. When you go to shows, right?
I do. I really think that, you know, we are seeing a sort of a renewed interest, a new interest from people that probably wouldn't have considered them before. I know one of the things that, you know, a lot of the blogs like on Kingsnake and some of the other websites that aren't necessarily carpet related, when they were talking about Tinley, was the fact that, you know, wow, you know, carpets, never knew. You know, never knew, you know, they had so many morphs, never knew that they were so, you know, neat to look at. And, you know, it not that it overshadowed the ball pythons, but it certainly made a dent in what people were talking about, and which I thought was cool, because that wasn't us. We had nothing to do with that. You know, that was somebody independent of us going and writing it on a website that really isn't carpet-centric. So
right.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
I think you have the perfect storm of events, too. I think you have the carpet python book coming out. You have the carpet python row. You know, you have all the new morphs coming out. And, you know, that's sort of the purpose of this show, is to get, you know, the top breeders in the carpet python world out there so people can appreciate what awesome animals they are, you know.
It's certainly true.
Oh, that was the purpose of the show? Oh, crap. I should really pay attention more.
Oh, and
sorry,
I had to sell more snakes for himself.
Oh, well, that's the underlying goal of everything Owen does, but that's neither here nor there.
That's funny.
Yeah, if you can get out to Tinley next year, you know, do it. It's worth the trip. It's worth, you know, for us on the East Coast, it's worth the drive. It's a long drive, but it was well worth it. I'm definitely going to go back and do it again, and I think it's a great venue to showcase, like what you said, what we're all working with. It's a national venue. You're getting people from the East Coast, the West Coast, the Midwest. I mean, you get just about the whole country coming to look at this stuff, so I think it's a great showcase, you know, for what we're doing.
Yeah, I hope that maybe next year we can do some kind of broadcast there from Carpet Python Row. I think that's
cool.
Yeah,
I mean, they got to go and you're paying, right?
Yeah, that's it. very cool.
We'll caravan out there.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. So another question that we ask everybody that comes on here is, if you could have any type of carpet, well, I don't know, maybe there's not a carpet python that you don't have, but in your collection, for anywhere, locality, morph, subspecies, what would it be?
Well, my dream carpet was the Darwin, and having gotten them this past year, that's really been sort of a culmination of everything that I've worked towards since I started getting into these things. So they are certainly right now at the top of my list as far as what I go down there to look at. First thing I do is pull open. First, we'll make sure he's still there, the albino's drawer, and he hadn't gotten out or anything, make sure he's still kicking. I do it every morning. It's almost like a ritual. I go down, let the dog out, and then check on the albino.
I would do the same thing, but I can't laugh too hard. Okay.
But I definitely I like diamonds too. I've never worked with them, and it's something I want to get into. Yeah, down the road, I'd like to get a really nice pair of diamonds and grow them up real slow and work with them, because it's just a snake I've never worked with. So
yeah, definitely love a nice pair of diamonds. That reduced pattern diamond that I think somebody posted it over on the forum the other day they're really nice. Yeah. And you got those.
They're really neat.
I'd
like to see
diamonds.
What they look like as adults. I like to see what the pattern does and see if it stays that reduced or it kind of just sort of all blends together as they get older.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what they look like.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. So,
I'm
sorry.
No, I was just going to see, so I'm waiting for Eric to get into the baleens now, because I know he wants to ask those questions because he's going to breed the baleens. I'm going to stay far, far away from them, but I still want to know the info. So.
Yeah, so Jason, you're one of the only guys, I think, in the world that has had success with the Bolens Python. So I want can you give us a rundown of the breeding story, start to finish?
Sure. It was, I think we were in the right place at the right time. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my partner at the time that I did this. His name was Frank Memo. We had, he and I went in together and bought a pair of wild-caught Bolens and had them shipped in from Indonesia. Very excited to get them in here. They were adults. They were ready to go. He took the female, I took the male, because it was before breeding season. And the male did great, started feeding right off the bat. The female fed right off the bat too, but she wasn't gaining any weight. So we were curious as to why she wasn't gaining any weight. And she had a very strange parasite. She had a lungworm parasite.
Ugh.
And they're the strangest looking things you've ever seen. So she didn't make it, but the male continued to thrive. And so we were obviously disappointed. We made the investment, and now we didn't know what to do because it just wasn't panning out. And a friend of ours in the area, his name is Pete Call, had a group of them, and he had plenty to work with. He offered us a female. And we said, we jumped on it. We said, yeah, we'll take her. We'll give her a shot and see what she does. So he had left her in his facility, and she was just in a Rubbermaid container sitting out, not on heat or anything, just out in the middle of his facility. And he lived about 20 minutes from me, if that. So I'm not exactly sure how long he had her sitting out there off the heat, but we came and we got her. We took her back to my place where the male was, because at that point it was right at breeding season. We were getting ready to cool all our stuff down too. So we brought her in, and she was pretty cold. And I said, well, let's not mess that rhythm that she's got going on up. So we immediately started dropping our temperatures and, giving them, probably 80, 82 during the day. And I dropped the temperatures as low as I could get it, as low as my basement would allow me to go. I think at the very coolest, I probably got them in the mid to upper 60s. And we went through what I would consider a normal cool down routine with them, other than, we let them get a little cooler than I let my normal carpets get. And, that was really the only weird thing we did, is just that she was sitting out off heat for some time. We put them in 6-foot Neodesha cages. We put them together probably a week or so after we picked her up, and they copulated immediately. Breeding Bolens has nothing to do with not getting them to copulate, because the males will actually copulate all year round. They don't care. So we noticed more copulations than we could count. And so I said, well, what happens is what happens. I put a nest box in there. And I don't know if this had anything to do with it, because these are sort of ground-dwelling, burrow-dwelling animals. but it was an opaque or solid colored nest box. So you, no light got in there whatsoever. It was totally dark where she was.
Huh.
And she, after, you know, we started warming them back up, she would spend more and more time in the lay box. So I would go in there every 2 or 3 days to check her, and then one day I went in there and noticed two slugs sitting in the corner of the lay box. I said, and it was not time for her to lay yet. And I said, oh no, well, we got slugs. I guess that's an accomplishment in and of itself at that point in time.
Sure.
And, so I said, well, you know, let's wait and see. She hasn't dropped anything else. And I guess another week or so, a week and a half went by. I came home from work one day, went down to check her, and she's sitting on a big clutch of eggs. And, you know, I and this is on me, and I take full responsibility. At the time, I didn't have the incubator that I have now, and I had a little homemade incubator. And we put the eggs in there, and they were fine, but it goes back to what I said earlier about the airflow in an incubator is super, super important. And the airflow that I had in the incubator that we have, I just don't think it moved the air around enough. So we lost a lot of the eggs. We did get three of them to hatch. And
awesome.
And only one survived.
Oh.
So, and that's the one that I still have to this day. It's a male, and I, you know. That was the whole story. I think we were just in the right place at the right time. A perfect storm of events that probably we still don't know exactly what triggered it, whether it be her sitting out for however long just in that container in Pete's facility, or whether it be, you know, the right setup that I had in my basement at the time, the right lay box. I don't know what it was. I really don't. I couldn't tell you what the component was that triggered it.
Maybe you won't remember this at all, but I don't know if you wrote this down or not, but did you notice any difference in the weather at the time? Like, was there a lot of pressure, low pressure systems coming in, or?
I don't think there was any more than usual for this area,
okay.
For the East Coast. I think we got a few storms came through, but I don't think it was any more or less than we would normally get. I did talk to Sean Christian at Tinley. And he seems to think, and, you know, he's just postulating, but that you need to create that burrow environment for the females to make them feel comfortable. And maybe that's
like that.
Maybe having that dark lay box that no light could get in at all, except for the hole on the top of the lay box. It was completely, it was like a blue Rubbermaid container. Dark blue Rubbermaid container, and maybe that was enough to simulate her being in a burrow.
Wouldn't that be crazy if it was that simple?
You never know. You never know what's going to trigger it.
Huh.
So, it's something. Yeah, I'd like to experiment with further, and when I get a chance to talk to Mark, maybe he and I can set up something at his place that would simulate that as well.
So, do you have plans to breed your boy? I mean, is he of proper size and ready to go, and you just got to figure out getting a girl for him, or does he still have a little bit of a ways to go?
Oh, no, he's plenty big enough. For me, other projects kind of took priority, and I never wound up just picking up a female for him.
Right.
I live very close to Mark Spataro, who has a very large group of them, and so I can go over there and work with them anytime I want.
Awesome.
Awesome. How do you keep you have an adult male, right?
Yeah, I have an adult male.
How do you keep, is it similar to carpet python as far as temps and stuff, or?
I keep them almost exactly the same as I keep my carpets. What I do notice, they have a much higher metabolism than the normal carpets do. So they eat a lot more, and they metabolize it quicker. You really have to provide them with clean water at all times, because they do drink, and they for whatever reason they don't like water that's been sitting around for very long. and keeping a very clean cage as well. Again, he's on newspaper. I worked with all different substrates with the Bolins when I had the pair of them. We did the cypress mulch, we did aspen, we did paper, and by far paper was the easiest, and they seemed to do the best on it.
Interesting.
But yeah, they get the same temperature. They get they get a hot spot at 88 degrees or so, and then the cool spots, whatever the room is. So, and they don't tend to go on the heat as much as the other carpets do. He certainly has access to it when he needs it, but he tends to stay sort of in the middle to the back side of the cage most of the time. They don't need as much heat, I don't think, as regular carpets do.
Right. Interesting.
Cool. All right. So, I mean, I'm still too terrified to touch them. So I'm going to have to wait for, Jason, for you to start hammering out the details of how to keep them and breed them. And then, Eric, you can experiment. And then, down the road when the two of you have done all the hard work, maybe.
Jump
yeah.
Into-
Yeah.
There are enough farm-raised animals out there now that they really are easy to keep. I really don't do much more with them than your normal carpets, and they're very hardy. I think the problem in the beginning was it was all wild-caught stuff,
mm-hmm.
and the stress of captivity really took its toll on them. But these farm-raised juveniles seem to be pretty hardy. Like I said. The ones we produced, the one that lived, he's a beast. He doesn't require much.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's funny when you say that. I was talking to Nick the other day about scrub pythons, and he was talking about how difficult they are to breed, and one of the main reasons is because everything that you can get, well, not everything, but most of the harder stuff to breed as far as scrub pythons go. Is all wild caught, and if you don't start with a very young snake, then you're going to have a real hard time acclimating that female to captivity, let alone breeding in captivity. So I don't know.
More people start playing around with the wild caught, leads to more farm raised, leads to more captive hatch, leads to us figuring out how to breed it. It'd be definitely a cool thing to solve a mystery like that one. So,
yeah.
Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that will be the. I mean, the captive hatch stuff. There you get the longevity and enough time to work with them in order to try to figure out what is that missing component that we haven't figured out yet. Yeah, with the wild caught stuff, you didn't have much time to really get in there and really work with them before the stress of captivity took its toll on them.
Right.
Right.
And that's a bad thing. So. Cool. All right. Eric, did you have any other questions, anything you wanted to add or touch on? Or?
I'm trying to think if there's anything that I'm forgetting.
Okay. We'll all wait.
That's probably not a good thing.
No.
What about you guys? What do you guys have cooking for this season? Anything interesting?
I have my male caramel to my Muckle Pennell barrel. The one, Jason, that I picked up at that one Hamburg show that I showed you.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. She's going with my male caramel. Then I'm taking my male caramel and throwing him in with my MBB line jag female, and then I am breeding that red tiger to a red tiger and to a my big 50 laying, 50 egg laying girl to make some bunch of red tigers to see if I can get some good looking stuff and kind of try to get some new red blood in the mix there, and then I got my special project that I'm keeping secret, so it will be fun if it works out.
I was just thinking, Jason, every single female I have going this year is something I got from you. I was just thinking that as you asked that question. I'm thinking, well, yeah, I got that from Jason.
Yeah.
I have
That's a lot
I
of pressure.
Is there a plaque hanging in Jason's house from you, Eric? This, you know, this dinette set was donated by Eric or something like that?
I have the three red tigers. I have them going to a zebra jag to a red tiger. I have my caramel zebra male going to a red tiger. And what's the other one? Oh, the caramel jag. To a red tiger, and also to that, that was the first snake I bought from you, was the coastal that I got that you did that pairing, the tiger jag sib, the tiger jag sib.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I remember that.
I think that'll make some, she'll make some real nice caramel jags and some caramels. And the only other, two IJs going. Michael Pinnell line and GQ line. And I got those from Luke. I picked them up. They were his adults that he had. And he did that pairing last year, and they turned out really, really nice. And then just for the trying it, I had a granite girl, and I didn't think she was going to be big enough. But when I looked at the IJ girl, I just figured I'd put her with the caramel jag and see what happened, and they were locked up tonight, so I don't know.
Cool. Oh, nice.
I think I might put one of, you know, the red coaster I produced this year. I have a sibling of that that I produced a few years ago. I might forego the really nice tigers and put him to that red tiger female this year and
nice.
See
that would
what
be
happened.
Nice.
I think that'd be
there's
neat.
You know, that tiger jag sib pairing that you did, I'm telling you that I have this one snake, and you probably regret selling it, but I'm telling you, it looks like a tiger jag.
But it's okay.
I'm telling you, man, this thing is sharp. I can't explain it. It's super yellow. It's super clean. Oh, my God. It has real nice red tipping in the scales. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Hopefully it
stays that clutch really... really turned out well, and what I don't think I ever really said anything because it didn't live, but from that clutch, there was a red tiger that was produced from that tiger jag sib to tiger jag sib pairing. It never took off and it didn't live, but that's why you're seeing some of the red in yours, because for whatever reason, yeah, that pairing throws some red animals, and it was a perfectly striped, perfectly red tiger that I was so super excited about, and it never took off. I never could get it to go.
Ugh.
So that's, yeah, I kept it, I only have, six parents? Six? Yeah, six. So I'm pretty excited. It's my first time breeding, so.
Without Jason, you wouldn't have a season this year. So.
That would be correct. I tell you what,
again,
though, I was really tempted to do two different things. I wanted to put the citrus tiger with the red tiger, and I wanted to see what would happen with the color, which I don't know. I'm still tempted to do that. And then red tiger to red tiger. I mean, the results you got this year from that clutch is amazing. And I have a male to go with her, but I don't know.
I picked up my male just because of the results Jason got from his red tiger to red tiger. It was an Oaks show, and he was tempting me from like across the room with it all afternoon. So, and at the end, I'm just like, hey, give me this.
I really had to twist your arm on that one.
No, you're like, you want it. I'm like, I do. So that's really kind of how that went.
Yeah, it should be. I would love to see what kind of results you guys get from that, because, like I said, I've only done the one pairing, so it'll be neat to see what happens, you know, when some of the other siblings are bred together and with other things, because I think, you know, we'll see if that's, you know, you get the same kind of striping, what kind of variability you get, what kind of color you get. So I'm really looking forward to see what your guys' results are.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to see that girl breed. I've been waiting for this red tiger girl to drop eggs since I got her. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to her breeding for me.
Yeah, and after you're seeing your girl Echo, and she came from the Red Tiger line,
Echo's a boy, dude.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Coming from the Red Tiger line.
I'm
curious to see what that would do with a Zebra Jag, you know what I mean?
I don't even know where Echo came from. I mean, I told you, I got the male Jag from Jason, and then it just kind of, it was something that came out, and, you know, I got plans for him. You know, Carmel is in his future at some point, Tigers and other random things that I can throw at him. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. You got anything else, Owen?
I'm good. I think we're good, and I guess thank you, Jason, for coming on and wasting a couple of minutes. How long have we been on? Probably almost close to 2 hours now with us. It's been very cool of you to come on and basically do what we do at every snake show that you're at and just kind of talk your head off with us. So always cool.
No, it was a blast. Thank you for having me. It was a really good time.
Mm-hmm. And your what? So your website is, what is that again?
Oh, www.eastcoastserpents.net. We had some unfortunate failures with the website over the last year, so it's back up now. It's not quite the way I want it, but it's slowly getting there.
Good, good. And, of course, we can look for you at snake shows up and down the East Coast, and just look for your banner. It's what I always used to do when I was first buying, is just walk in the door and point, and that's where I'm going first. So it's all good with that. And they can email you through your site and on the forums. I'm really, what is your screen name is probably, what is that?
Just Jason
your,
Balin.
Oh, well, that's
very creative. It's just Jason Balin.
It's easy to remember. It's okay. So,
hey, wait, we had that talk with Nick, didn't we, last week, that he shouldn't have some crazy name for your...
should just be, like he said on every single one, he's just Nick Mutton, so now you know who you're talking to.
I'm just not that creative, so that's what I go. That way I can remember it, too, so when I go on there, I type in the right thing.
Jason, I'm sorry. I knew there was something else I wanted to talk to you about. The Carpet Fest.
Yes.
Right.
I totally forgot. I'm sorry.
I think it's a great idea. I think that would be a lot of fun. You get to talk to people who do what you do all the time, and without the pressure of having to sell stuff and watch your table and do all that kind of stuff. I think a social gathering. It can only help what we do.
Cool.
Yeah. So it was sort of.
I think it'd be a lot of fun. I'm glad you're doing it on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was toying around with the idea, and then I thought, you know, we were doing the national thing and da-da-da. But I thought that we'll start with the East Coast, see how it goes. And, you know, if somebody wants to do one on the West Coast, then they can do that too. But, I just think it would be a good time. But the problem that I'm having is I have no idea where to have it. As far as the location, as far as the state, you know, I don't know.
It sounds like you're about to ask him if we can have it at his house. I mean, you know.
No, I mean, as far as.
You think your wife will let us, you know.
I'm just thinking as far as, how far people are willing to travel, you know. What's pretty much the middle ground between New York and Virginia? Maryland?
Oh, Maryland's the middle ground, but I think people will be willing to travel at least a couple hours, for a get together. So I think wherever you have it, people make the trek. So
okay,
awesome.
Okay, well, Jason, Jim, so far it's me, Owen, you, and Jason and Luke.
Excellent. I am excited.
Can you get any better than that? Come on.
I think more people will make it than that. You got Mo, you got Howard, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
I hope so.
Okay. So we'll keep you posted on that, and hopefully springtime we'll be having the first Northeast Carpet Fest.
Cool. Very excited about that. All right. Well, that's all right. That's all right. Well, again, thank you very much, Jason, for coming on. And I know I'll see you in December 3rd at the Hamburg show. So I can't thank you enough. All right.
Well, I thank you guys too. It was great and a lot of fun. And I think what you guys are doing is great. I think it again promotes a lot of interest. So.
Cool.
Keep it up.
Thanks,
well,
Jason.
We'll definitely have you come back on, you know, and tell us we did a good job breeding this year. So. Okay.
Yeah, you're putting a lot of pressure on me.
I apologize for that. It's something I do apparently. So. All right.
Okay.
So Eric, who do we have coming up in the next few weeks? I know you said it's the scrubs. Topics and stuff going on now, right?
Well, next week we have Mo from Mojo Reptiles.
Good. I have to ask her about a tiger.
Yeah. If you like the color yellow, then I think Mojo Reptiles is your destination of choice.
And a fun quirky fact, it's probably the first girl guest we've had on, so yay us.
Yeah.
So.
That's true.
Sorry, I'm tired and in a quirky mood, everyone. So.
And then after our, we're going to do the two scrub shows.
Awesome.
First with Blake. And I've been following that thread they have over there on Morelia Pythons, just about different topics for the show. And it seems that localities seem to be a topic that a lot of people want to hear about, and Moluccan pythons. Everybody
mm-hmm.
wants to hear Blake's thoughts on what's going on with them. So should be a good
awesome.
Show. I really dig the scrub pythons. I think they're a cool group of snakes to work with, so I'm looking forward to it. And,
excellent.
I, you know, good couple of shows coming up.
Excellent. I'm always looking forward to the stuff we get coming up. As far as the shout-outs for the show, I know you got a bunch of them for that.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to thank Jason one more time for coming on and go over and check out his website, East Coast Serpents. He's got a lot of cool stuff. Me and you, Owen, can attest for that.
Mother of God,
the
yes.
Other thing, the other thing is... if you haven't already, check out the Complete Carpet Python. I can't stress enough that that's a must-have for all carpet python enthusiasts. Very good book. I think you can get it on Nick's website, which is inlandreptiles.com. You can get it on Justin's website, which is australianaddictions.com.
Yeah, and I was actually turning a few people onto the book this afternoon at the show. People were asking me all this information. I told them if they really want a good read on the species, definitely pick up the book. So
awesome.
I did my part.
Yeah. And I can't stress enough, if you guys are into carpet pythons, you should definitely be a member over on MoreliaPythons.com. That's your pretty much the main carpet python forum out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think also the Bush League Breeders Club, I think that's another, has good carpet stuff going on over there. So join both of those forums, MoreliaPythons.com and BushLeagueBreeders.com.
I have not actually joined Bush League Breeders. I should do that. Anyway.
You're not a member of
that? No, I'm not.
Oh, wow. I
learned something new about me today.
how about that? Well, what the heck, man? Go over there and join us.
I'll get on there. It's something I got. Many, many other things. So I'll get there, all right? Just pester me every show.
And then the only other thing I have is that it's probably coming to a close soon, and maybe you should put Echo in the drawing there.
Crap. Yeah, I should.
Kathy, she goes by Insomniac 101. She puts this calendar together for us every year. And she picks 12 people to go. 12 people snakes to go up on the calendar. from the pictures that are posted over there. She has a thread over there of Morelia pythons. And if you're interested in picking one up, shoot her a PM over on Morelia Python.
Awesome.
Cool.
And, yeah, she'll take care of you with that. As always, you can check myself and Eric out on Morelia Python Radio on Blog Talk Radio. That's where you can get the show. You can listen live when we're casting it. Also, you can get it on iTunes, and you can check out Morelia Python Radio on Facebook. Also, any questions and suggestions that you might have can be sent to Eric at MoreliaPythonRadio@gmail.com. Also, if you just want to send whatever you feel like sending to Eric at that web address, that's fine, too. I know he likes email, so go ahead, send away. Glad I said that about your email, not mine. And for any questions and concerns for myself and Rogue Reptiles, I can be reached at rogue-reptiles.com. Also, I can be reached at rogue-reptiles, that's with a Z, at gmail.com. And, of course, you can find us both trolling around on the forums, and you can always private message us there. Eric, it's been a long day for me, so I'm going to get some sleep.
All right, man.
All right. Good night, everyone. And, Eric, good night, and I will talk to you soon.
All right.
All right. Good night.
Thanks, everybody.